It is episode 89 of Fancy Ramen Podcast. I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott.
And you could be hearing this on Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or many other great podcast services. I'm back. I'm back for good, hopefully, until at least 2020 or late 2019.
That's great. Welcome back.
And who knows if the world will still exist then.
50-50, I guess.
That said,
so how have you guys been?
Yeah, what? How's everyone been doing? How have you guys been holding up without me? Mostly without me, at least.
I mean, we've been fine, but if you want to feel good, we've been terrible. We really don't know how to get on. Cookie's hair fell out. He missed you so much, and mine already left out of anticipation of your departure. And so you're the only person left with mop top.
And we all know that'll be gone in a couple years too anyways. No,
yeah, probably.
Cookie, we're not doing videos, so no one can obviously see this, but Cookie, you're clean shaven. What are you using to shave your dome with, so to speak?
It's got to be a Bic razor.
Actually, no, it's a Gillette Pro Fusion Guide 5 with the vibration feature.
Jeez.
Keeps me from cutting myself.
Do the vibrations feel good?
No, they just keep me from cutting myself. It's a lot harder to cut yourself with a thing that's going side to side and up and down rather than, you know, a very sharp blade that if you happen to go in one random direction.
Like, that looks like a close fucking shave, so.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think it is.
It's actually 2 days worth of growth because I didn't shave it last night. I was supposed to. I'm trying to, like, do a shave every other night type of thing. Mm.
That's so much work.
Yeah, I gave up on having the whole dreads thing. So I was like, fuck it. Well, if I'm not going to have dreads, I might as well just not have hair. Because that's the life I live.
This is a very 0 to 100 type of lifestyle.
But besides that, I've got an art show up at my work right now. Ever since it's went up last week, I've gotten at least 2 messages a day about someone looking to buy some boards. So yay!
That's awesome.
Got a meeting with a lady on Monday to talk about buying a snowboard.
So
doing one of those.
Is it a communal art show? Or I don't know the terms, but like an art show where a bunch of different artists have exhibits up, or is it just for you?
So this month it's me and one of my coworkers / good friends, Catherine Goodman. Her paintings are up along with my skateboard, so this one's a group show, I guess. But usually the gallery is just, I say gallery, it's really a big atrium that's got kind of like a subsection set off to it that allows for random things to be displayed. It's usually where the Christmas tree goes up around December. So they were just like, hey, out of all those other years of time of year, let's just have art. So yeah, that's going on right now. There's some parties that are going to be happening pretty soon where some skateboards are being auctioned off as well. So I've been doing a lot of art stuff besides the whole video game and anime scene. So since we know Neil doesn't do much usually, how have you been, Scott?
Yikes. I've been great. My favorite pastime is ignoring Neil's turn in the podcast, and finally I can get some actual like enjoyment out of that now that you're back.
Yay! Doing anything interesting?
Let's see. It's been 2 weeks, so yeah, I've done quite a bit. I went up to Lake Flathead, which is probably one of the biggest lakes in Montana, and celebrated my grandma's 80th birthday, and pretty much all of my dad's siblings on his side were up there and whatnot, and had this really cool lake house rented out. So I've got some neat pictures from that. Otherwise, been working hard, been playing hard. I've actually gotten a lot of time in on video games within the past about week and a half, and it has been a phenomenal time getting to just like sit down and veg out for a bit. So been playing lots of video games, especially within the past 24 hours. Been playing too much video games.
There's never too much video games.
Yeah, but other than that, I haven't actually gone out and done too much. Yeah, I think that's about it. Is actually, I've dedicated my past week and a half to 2 weeks to almost video games exclusively. So I'm going to have to pull a Neil and say my life is devoid of all things outside of gaming.
Perfect. And Neil, been up to anything for the past 2 weeks besides working?
I've had quite a bit of time over the past month and a half, though, to read a lot of manga, though, during like the free moment or free minute and so forth at work, be it coffee breaks and whatnot. And right. I did want to point out one fun little manga title. I don't recall the Japanese title, but the English title for it is called Jobless Siblings, or The Jobless Siblings. And it's basically about an adult brother and sister living with their parents in Japan, obviously. They don't have jobs, and they're basically just short little comic strips detailing out showcasing their lives, which have zero responsibility, and yet they seem to still bring up like the aside from like usually disappointing their mother consistently, their father is always very supportive of their lifestyles for reasons that you learn later on, and they seem to get a lot of friends who are all very productive, but all really envy their jobless lifestyle. I've been dreaming of that day when I too could be jobless and still somehow survive, because holy cow.
You just need that supportive dad who will stand for you no matter what. It looks like the name is Hatarakanai Futari, the jobless siblings.
Yeah.
And I have to ask, do they have a rivalry between the two of them then? It's two different kind of characters in the same situation to play.
Yeah, it's two very, very different characters. Like the brother is more stoic, and he tends to be more accepting of his own situation and seems very, very content with it. Whereas the sister, like obviously just as content, is more about like mindless entertainment and kind of a little. She's not really dumb, but she certainly puts on a dumb air to herself, and she tends to feel very guilty about being jobless. The dynamic between the two is obviously one of the big things. There's nothing like implied like romance or anything. It's not going down the CISCON route or anything.
You say that now.
I'm like 250 chapters in. They're all relatively short, and the humor tends to be very, very like simplistic at times. But yeah, it. I don't think there's any sort of romance. The only thing that ever comes up is that the dad keeps trying to get a coworker, like a younger female coworker, to meet his son. So hopefully his son can continue being a neat. But if you look at any of the images, they're very typical, stereotypical neats. Like they wear sweatshirts and sweatpants, and that's it. Gray, of course, is the color. You know, I also picked up a, I guess that's the wrong way to put it. I inherited an old keyboard from Tiffany. We were looking around for her ducky box, her ducky keyboard box.
Did she pass?
No, but I guess that was also a poor choice of words. We were looking around for her ducky box so we could find like these keycap removal tools. I was interested in like dissecting my G810, my Logitech that's been giving me problems. And in the process, we came across an old Rosewill keyboard, which I think Rosewill is like an off-brand. Sorry, Scott?
Oh, I was going to say, I have a Rosewill and I love these keyboards. They're great.
Yeah, this one's got
like
Cherry
a super
MX switches.
Cheap mechanical keyboard. Yeah, that's actually exactly what I'm using. You may have the same keyboard as me. Let me look.
I've never heard of Rosewill.
They do a lot of like cheap things.
No, I'm actually a big fan of these. Like anybody who's in the market for a mechanical keyboard and wants to keep it cheap, essentially test out their first set. Like these Rosewills are, I think, an excellent choice. Mine's not even backlit, and I'm pretty sure I paid $60, $70 tops for it. But like overall, it's a really nice keyboard. It's got great action, and it is relatively ergonomic for not having any sort of weird shaping applied to it.
I am looking at the RK9000BL right now. It's got cherry blacks.
Yeah, that's what the BL is for, I believe.
It's also for boys' love.
Boys' love, yeah. The cherry boys' love.
I didn't realize they were cherry blacks, so I was expecting blues with the BL.
I think maybe B might just be... Well, no, because there's also brown as well. Yeah, it's weird because in most industries, K or BK represents black.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like on printers in particular, K always is your black ink.
Key.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But aside from that, I've actually had some time to catch up on some anime, and I think the most important one to probably bring up is that JoJo Part 5, or Golden Wind, or Vento...
Golden Experience.
well, technically, the chapter, or the part is Golden Wind, but the character's stand is technically supposed to be Golden Experience, but I think they found an easy out by naming him Golden Wind in the subtitle and dub, because that's also the story arc's name. Arc, that's not
it
really
right. It doesn't stop you from hearing Golden Experience.
Yeah, it's...
Golden Wind.
Yeah, Vento... Okay. I don't know how to pronounce anything Italian, but Vento Aureo?
Aureo's gold for sure. Vento's got to be the wind or yeah. breeze or something.
I don't know. I really don't remember a whole lot of Part 5. It's been so long since I've read it, but after watching the first episode, it definitely sets a good... Watching the first two episodes, it sets a really good tone for this chapter of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this one. I like it a lot. I've read half of this segment of the manga, and that's actually where I've kind of stopped, because the source I was using to read it stopped halfway as well. And so I went, oh, well, I'll wait for the anime to come out and I can catch up then. I'm never that thirsty for JoJo that I need to like hunt across the internet to find, you know, the pages to read.
Cookie, have you watched Part 5 or any episodes in Part 5 yet?
Of JoJo?
Yeah.
No.
Didn't you finish Part 4?
No.
Or am I
crazy? No, I don't think he ever got into it. We pressured him a couple times.
And I started watching Part 1. I finished Part 2. And then, you know, the next anime season came on. So, you know, everything old was dead to me. Because I just had to go get transported into a fantasy world with... remember that one time I got reincarnated as a slime?
Yes, I was hoping someone would mention this.
I watched the first episode of that, too. That was pretty good.
It only gets better.
It does. It only gets better.
I got contacted by my sister, I think, right after it came out. She's like, Scott, okay, hear me out on this. I've got an anime for you to watch. I was like, okay. She said, you need to call me as soon as you finished it. And so since I don't have Crunchyroll Premium, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to have to wait like a week before I can do that. And I watched it, and she seemed super hyped about it. I thought the first episode was all right. It was pretty funny. Immediately moving into the second episode, I realized that like it's just one of those where it needs a little bit of world building in that first episode to get to a point where it's really interesting or exciting. But the jokes all land really well.
So it might not be as good, but I also started watching, or I watched the first episode of Overlord.
I've heard about that, yeah.
Overlord is very good. I am not caught up on last season, but yeah, Overworld and Overworld 2, very excellent.
So that's the same premise, right? It's the same basic idea, like someone ends up in a fantasy world and they're overpowered as shit.
The gimmick is slightly...
The antics that ensue.
It's a little different in which that the main character is playing an MMO as the servers are about to be turned off. And since I'm only one episode in, I don't know if this is expanded upon any further. But since he stays logged into the MMO when the servers are shut down, his consciousness apparently seems to stay within the MMO. And
it's Sword Art Online-ish.
Kind of, except it seems like there are no other players. So since he's like a max level person who is a like a literal skeleton magician lord guy, basically like a demon god, like him being a normal dude then being put into this body, I'm assuming there's some conflict between him being like, well, I'm actually a normal person, but I guess I have to act like a badass now, potentially.
They actually explain that really well in the show. I don't want to give anything away for you, but yeah, they actually, it's not that big of a spoiler. They've, since his character is undead, there are like inhibitors in his character's like coding that allow him to, like, if anything like flusters or freaks him out, he'll be like, there'll be like this little particle effect, then he'll get calmed down. So it's weird. I like it. It's fun because he's like, yeah, I'm human, so I don't really want to kill humans. But at one point, they're just a bunch of humans being slaughtered. And he's like, huh, I'd expect this to bother me, but it doesn't. Oh, well.
So
then just kind of moves on with life.
And just to throw a wrench into it, I also watched a show called Rascal Doesn't Dream of Bunny Senpai, which at first when I got the recommendation, I was like, this is gonna be stupid, real stupid, because Bunny Girl is mentioned in the fucking title. But the first four episodes actually turned out to be quite thoughtful, and I guess much better than the title indicates. Kind of,
I was going to say, that is not the descriptor I would have expected for that title. Thoughtful. If thoughtful is the first word you go to, then it definitely lives up to a different expectation than I think the title leads.
Have you guys heard of the show Hyoka before?
No.
Well, without that direct comparison, I'll drop that specific topic, but the Rascal Bunny Girl anime seems to potentially be a mix of mystery and supernatural. The first arc, which encompasses the first four episodes, brings up the idea that when a character, when the titular bunny girl character, who is not actually a bunny girl, she discovers that as a former actress or child actress who is now trying to stay out of the spotlight, her existence within reality seems to fade away. It's supposed to be like, not even a graceful metaphor. It's that when she's trying to stay away from the limelight, everyone around her actually starts forgetting about her existence. And the protagonist, who obviously sees this person as a love interest, is trying to figure out what they can do to keep her from basically disappearing. So I'm assuming that there's some sort of supernatural.
I thought the title said that he wasn't interested in her, though.
Well, he's a little tsundere himself, so.
Oh, I see.
Well, this can be found on VRV.
Yeah, although
that's on my watch list now.
While we're on the topic, though, I think Crunchyroll, also VRV for that matter, lost their agreement with Funimation.
Did you get the email?
Tiffany got the email.
Yeah, so
did you have details on this, Cookie?
Yeah. So actually, as far as I got, I kind of dug a little bit deeper into the email once I saw it, because I was like, well, is it going to be as expensive as it has been? Yes. Yes, it is. So for whatever reason, Crunchyroll, VRV, which was started between Crunchyroll and Funimation, they had some kind of falling out. So Funimation's pulling all of its content from VRV. VRV / Crunchyroll was very cool about like saying, hey, guys, in about a month or a couple of weeks, you're going to notice that there's no more Funimation products on VRV. We did have our licenses agreement did run out and was not renewed or whatever it actually the wording was. But as like a compensation, we're giving you guys, I think it was like $20 worth of premium credits to buy things on like the Crunchyroll shop, or if you don't redeem it, it's just going to go automatically to 2 months free of VRV. So I was like, oh, that's good to know that I can no longer watch the English anime that I kind of just abandoned anyway after I caught up on it and wanted to watch the next episode, so I just switched to Japanese and Crunchyroll.
Well, so is Funimation mostly just involved in the dubs?
Yeah.
Because I was under the assumption that Funimation also had the licenses for a bunch of, not a bunch, but like a handful of titles as well.
So they've got the licenses for a lot of titles, but only the dubs. So the whole Crunchyroll and Funimation originally were like, hey, we're partnering up, and so this means if you have a Crunchyroll subscription, you'll be able to watch the dubs of things if it's on Funimation. If you have a Funimation subscription, you'll be able to watch the subs on Funimation. Then a week later, they were like, by the way, never mind about that. VRV. Just pay $3 extra for either, like, a dollar extra for Funimation or $3 extra for Crunchyroll, and you get all this shit.
Oh, so it's still going to stay on VRV then?
So anything dubbed that was on Funimation is probably going to leave VRV.
Okay, gotcha.
But all the subbed content was on the Crunchyroll side. Speaking of things losing faith, I got an email last week or 2 weeks ago that said, I know neither of you guys are MMO fans, but there was a MMO that was really hotly anticipated then died on arrival called WildStar. They're gone. They were like, yeah, we're shutting down the servers at the end of this month. And there was also this hotly debated first-person shooter called Lawbreakers.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I'm familiar with Lawbreakers.
Same thing, basically. So they're shutting down their servers officially as well. So that game doesn't exist anymore. So if you bought it, it's just downloaded space on your hard drive now without servers, so you can't do... It doesn't sound like they're going to have any kind of peer-to-peer since they're shutting down the servers, and I don't think they had any kind of a local match setup.
They got into the game behind Overwatch, which is just unfortunately like probably the like last nail in the coffin, it seems. Because I'm watching their gameplay right now for Lawbreakers to like refresh my memory, and this is about as Overwatch first-person multiplayer shooter arena as you can get. I think minus objectives.
But the difference was Lawbreakers wasn't that good.
It doesn't look that good.
So I was playing the I was in the beta. Like the thing they were like, this is a hero-based shooter with the anti-gravity or movement mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
You just from shooting across the screen, you couldn't tell what kind of hero you were shooting at. Their different kind of special moves were not very weren't very unique, or like, oh, this person just happens to have a rocket launcher. Oh, yeah. This person can grappling hook and swing around, but they have a sword.
Yeah, that's what I'm watching right now, is a little grappling hook. And it doesn't, like, the momentum on it doesn't seem very good either. Like, we've seen a lot better grappling hook momentum throughout, what is it, like, Black Widow and Overwatch, and the grapple hook in Titanfall and Titanfall 2. Like,
Call of Duty Black Ops 4.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You got that now, too. Hmm.
But that's like, some sad-ish news.
Rest in peace, I guess.
Now that we're done with the Death Corner, I do have one more piece of sad-ish news.
Let's hear
Nothing's
it.
Dying, though. So, as you guys know, I am the fan of Black Ops 4 in this group, this small, tiny community of us four that hang out. They've released their supply drops in the form of, like, the content pass. So, if you're familiar with Fortnite and how they do it, as you're playing the game and you get experience and things, you get unlocks and stuff.
Yeah.
So everyone's done their research, and it's about an hour worth of in-game playtime. So not even like an hour of being logged into the game gets you one level. They've released 200 levels for, I think it's like 72 days. And in order to get all 200 things, they were saying it's like 4 or 5 hours of active gameplay a day.
So you have to be the characters from Neil's favorite manga right now.
Yes.
Got to equip that gray sweatsuit. Start grinding.
Increases video game endurance.
Is that based off of like average? Because doesn't win rate also contribute? Like if you win, it doesn't contribute to experience. No.
Doesn't contribute to experience at all. And for that reason, they were like, okay, so we know it's, we know roughly it's an hour worth of gameplay. So let's do this. So a guy went into the Battle Royale mode.
Yeah.
And he was like, so lasted a good 10 minutes, got 6 kills, and you were like, and you can see this is the amount of experience I got for this, towards this thing. So it was 10 minutes worth of time. So then he was like, then me and my friends camped out into a bathroom towards the middle of the circle for 10 minutes. No kills. Same amount of
grenades at their feet. Yeah.
So it's just like, oh, well, yeah, that's kind of sad, especially considering Activision's boosted the time it takes to unlock a level twice since the game's released.
Well, and there's always opportunity for that. What is it? Remember when Destiny was rigging the numbers on Destiny 2, where they were saying you were getting as much experience, like the experience you were getting had so much of an impact, and then in actuality, you weren't receiving that level of impact on your experience?
Oh, yeah. Good times.
Wow. It's almost like there is like rife new ground for that to be done again.
Pretty much. So it's kind of sad and depressing considering, like, so I pre-ordered the bigger version of it because I wanted the Black Ops Pass, so I didn't have to worry about anything. And it was like, oh, yeah, get you all these COD points, and we don't know what else. There's nothing to spend COD points on in this game as of right now that's been out for a few weeks. So it's a slow launch for like a Call of Duty game, which is really weird. That's Cookie's News Corner.
On to games, my friends. On to games. What have y'all cowpokes been up to in the gaming world?
I am going to continue to talk then. I have not been a cowpoke. I've actually been a Spartan for the past couple of days.
Playing Halo?
Nah.
Playing Assassin's Creed.
Playing Rise for Xbox?
Yes, playing Rise for Xbox.
Rome Total War 2.
Pretty much. Been playing Assassin's Creed. Project Stream finally actually started working for me last week.
Mm-hmm.
So if you guys recall, I talked about that a few weeks ago where Google's allowing you to stream AAA games on Google Chrome.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually been working for me. I played about 6 or so hours of Assassin's Creed Odyssey. And let me tell you what, at first I was like, this Project Stream, it's kind of jank and buggy because I'm also sitting in front of a 4K monitor that's attached to my computer. It was not a fan of that. But last night I ended up switching it over and using the extra long HDMI cord from my computer to my projector, which is not 4K. It's actually 720p. And oh my God, it looked glorious. While trying to stream it to 4K, it had a sluggishness to it. So there was quite a bit of input delay. But as soon as I switched it over to, like, the 4K monitor still plugged in, but it's only just streaming to the 720p monitor, i.e. the projector.
Mm-hmm.
Buttery smooth, not noticing any kind of input delay. It looked beautiful. And my gosh, this is a good time to get back into Assassin's Creed. If you have been skipping all of them and then played Origins, if you hadn't played Origins also, I am enjoying What's-Her-Face's Odyssey. One of the systems that they're implementing for it, they were like, hey, what kind of mode would you like to play it on? Exploration mode, or would you like to play it on normal mode? So normal mode being, you go into an area, you do the little synchronization, eagle flying, hawk view thing.
You get the whole map.
Pings everything on the map. Exploration mode, you do the synchronization point, hawk thing, and it just lets you zoom in on the map. The map is still empty. Mm. So you actually have to talk to people, and then they're like, oh yeah, I need you to go rob this guy. And you're like, okay. And I kind of was just like, I'll get on it. and expected there to be a like little quest map form quest marker for me. Nah, there wasn't. I talked to the guy again, and yeah, he wasn't willing to repeat anything though. So I kind of wandered around for 5 minutes until I found where I needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're assuming, okay, this character, she's been on this island for her entire life, basically. She knows where everyone lives and where everything is.
Yeah.
Now, the next mission I got from the guy who was like, okay, now that you robbed that guy, I need you to go kill this dude. And I was like, cool. One of the questions is, where do you think I can find said person? And he's like, oh, you should know. It's south of this area towards the bay. And you're like, okay, cool. So it's going to be south of this portion of the map in this general area. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, yeah, nice. That's actually like a really good way of doing it, so that way you're not being overwhelmed with everything. About 3 hours into the game, I got the title screen for Assassin's Creed Odyssey. It actually showed up for me. So I was like, sweet. I can stop playing now, probably.
Is it a very long tutorial then? Is that what you're saying? Like, that ends with the tutorial? Or why does the title screen pop up so late in the gameplay?
It's not really the full tutorial, because they have a miniature tutorial where you're using your character's parent mm-hmm. in like the Battle of 300, basically, style yeah. battle, where they're like, this is how you fight, this is how you parry, this is how you do this, this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, cool. And then that battle ends, and then you're 20-odd years later as whatever character you chose. Everyone chose the female. And then it's like, you're on this island. By the way, this is how you explore. This is a horse. This is how you ride said horse.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, okay, your Odyssey doesn't start. So Assassin's Creed Odyssey doesn't start until you actually leave the island. So it's more like, oh God, did any of you guys play Far Cry 5?
No, nada.
So similar to that, where it gives you like this really big area to explore for as long as you want until you finally do that one thing that you know, oh yeah, I do have to do this thing because this is where the story's leading me. And then it lets you go through the rest of the world.
I mean, kudos to Assassin's Creed then for expanding their map size to not only cover like ancient Greece, but also Western Montana. That is mind-blowing. Like, I am so surprised.
But yeah, fun game, good game. I'm gonna play a bit of it until the Project Stream beta ends, and then I'll probably I might end up renting and becoming a cowboy.
Yeehaw.
How's that been?
It's been phenomenal. I have been playing a lot of Red Dead Redemption 2. In my case, emphasis on the dead part. Whenever I'm doing something of value that's a small, like, little side operation or chore, I mean, picking up a carcass of an animal to sell in town for skins or food or whatnot, I almost always end up dying before I can return that animal and reloading with all my effort wasted. The game itself has been a real delight. I've probably played about 12 hours straight within the last day. So I pretty much sat down with a glass of water and a little bit of beef jerky and just went to it. I'm trying to think what the most valuable thing to talk about for the game right now is, because I'm super early in the storyline. I will say, similar to Assassin's Creed, there is a very long prologue or tutorial portion for anybody who is interested in picking up the game. It did take me a little over an hour, maybe even 2 hours worth of gameplay time to actually finish the like tutorial portion to get in the actual open world elements. And then even then, the open world is quite expansive, and you can really actually start to explore completely devoid of any, I'd say, like, real influence in whether you need to take story missions or not. You can saddle up on your horse and just start riding if you feel like it and exploring. But the early missions have been good at explaining deeper mechanics to the game. I have to say that one of the things I'm enjoying about this game a lot is that its mechanics are deep enough and relatively accessible that when I'm not accidentally misreading something on a menu cue or I'm not reading it fast enough and being gunned down in the streets, I'm learning something new in my toolkit on how I can kind of respond to scenarios and situations. I think there is like a fair learning curve to picking up all of the skills in this game. And I don't know how much is carryover from the original Red Dead, because I never played that game, or Red Dead Revolver, which I think is a spiritual prequel
the
to
first
these
one.
Games. Yeah. But man, it is so good to be a cowboy. This is my preferred experience over the GTA sandboxes for sure.
It's a lot of praise.
Yeah, I've been enjoying it a lot. But granted, this is also a game that I've only spent really the last day with. So I'm worried about talking too much about it as a whole because there's so much more to do. I can say I've had some fun events with learning how, say, the camping system works. If you camp somewhere that is off of a trail and deep enough in the backwoods, you sort of end up teleporting to the best camping location, which put me and my horse on top of a snowy mountain at one point in time, in which I don't think there was any easy descent. So I was walking down what seemed to be the shallowest side of this mountain when my horse trust, or like my horse bond level, reached its maximum. So 30 seconds later, my horse could take a misstep, break its ankles, fling me down the mountain and die and slide next to me, leaving me trapped in the snowy mountains and playing the long dark for probably an hour and a half until I could get to a new steed.
I was going to say, that's how the Hateful Eight started.
It is, yeah. It's pretty brutal not having a horse. So when your horse dies, it's really tough to kind of figure out, especially when you're in a remote area, like exactly what the best option is. Is it start trekking about 100 miles back into town, or is it go deeper and hope you bump into something that you can ride? Because horses are abundant on the trails in the more traveled areas, but when you get up into these snowy, like northern mountains, I think called the Grizzlies, you're just pretty much SOL if you get stuck. So I've had that. There's a lot of random encounters, helping damsels in distress, guys who have been bitten by snakes that you need to suck the blood out, some dude trying to reshoe his horse and getting kicked in the head dead right in front of you, and then getting blamed for the murder.
That happens?
Yeah, the system in the game is really, really great to where there are a lot of encounters and things randomly happening that you get alerted to on the minimap or by sounds like gunfire or seeing smoke that you can go and investigate. And depending on how quick you are to, say, respond to it, the event could have already happened and you're witnessing the aftermath to you being able to intervene and get involved either in an aggressive or a non-aggressive way. It's still very much like mean guy intervention or good guy intervention or completely ignoring the situation. Those are about the only options you get dialogue wise. But since you're playing sort of an already realized character that you're just really choosing the moral arc of, it works, I think, pretty well. It's relatively cohesive in keeping your character's voice within kind of the same like realm or writing, whether you're playing a good guy or a bad guy. But random events that have gotten me to make mistakes, like draw my gun at a public hanging and then become the center of attention versus the person who's about to hang, or trying to hold somebody up who is threatening one of my friends, but instead shooting his hat off and alerting the authorities to my presence in town. I've had a lot of screw ups, and I think the game's really fun because these games are built in a way that you can't just like save scrub, or was it save scumming, which is something that I'm really a culprit of in certain games where there is like a morality bar somewhere on there where you can play a real bad guy or a real good guy. So when I make mistakes that make my character a bad guy, I'm normally in other games, save scumming and then making the good choice now that I know what it is, and I know that the other option I was trying to take was not a good one. In this game, I've had to live with my consequences, which has made it more interesting. And it seems to actually have, I think, an interesting impact on how the game kind of responds to your involvement in your environment. I, walking through camp, have encountered this like little mini, it's not even a quest, but there's this small thing that can happen in camp from time to time where you'll walk by and one of the women in the camp will say, you know, you look down or something doesn't seem right. And so, and so you'll sit down and you can have like a little therapy session with one of the women, and your character will talk about their like doubts about the situation that you're in, all the way to say, I've been a bad man. I've been killing innocent folk for no reason. I don't know why. I just get so angry sometimes at what I'm dealing with. Like, it's really cool little niches for character building in otherwise just playing the standard game. I've been really impressed with the world building that they've done so far. I haven't done a huge amount of the story quest, so I don't have much to mention besides that they really start to, after you get all of the basic skills, have some like creative or more entertaining storylines occurring with the story quests. There's one where you take a guy named Lenny to the bar to make him forget some trouble that he's just bumped into. And it goes through these different, like, as you're getting drunker and drunker, your interactions with the patrons around this bar are getting higher stakes. And it's this sort of sequence that you'd find in, what's the name of that? Moulin Rouge. The Moulin Rouge has a absinthe sequence, and it's sort of that, like, your screen starts swimming, you switching from third and first perspectives, and your memory's like washing through, so you keep essentially ending up in different areas of this saloon trying to find your buddy Lenny. It's a delightful quest. Like, I played it twice over just because I enjoyed it so much the first time. I'd say that this is definitely worth renting and having some time to sit down with, at the very least. From my experience, it's been a fun time. And as far as the percentage goes of the story I've gotten into, it's probably less than 10%. And so there's a lot of content here to enjoy.
You're giving it a rent over a buy?
Well, I haven't played enough to really say about it. I mean, if the system gets dull, if the gameplay starts to get a little boring, then maybe rental's good. And if the story's not enough to rope you in, just picking it up to try it out, I think, is a worthwhile experience. But I don't know. I'm happy with my purchase already, and I've only played essentially a $5 an hour of entertainment rate.
Did you play any Grand Theft Auto 5 or GTA Online?
So I never played Grand Theft Auto 5. I played GTA 4 and some of the earlier ones, but I didn't get into it when online was happening. And since I don't have online on my PlayStation, this is a very single-player experience. I don't know how the social club thing is integrated with this, but there's really no interaction between me and other players. So I don't know if that makes things more hectic like GTA 5 can be.
I was under the opinion that Red Dead Redemption 2, its online portion wasn't out yet. Am I incorrect with that?
I mean, when you boot the game, you have the option to hit triangle for social club or X for story, and then it loads you up on the story.
The social club was also available for GTA 5 on on release, but the actual online element of it didn't come out until months later.
It was about a year, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was a bit of time.
Okay. The more you've talked about it, like, the one issue I always had with GTA games in general is that it at times felt like you never had immediate control over the type of character you wanted to be. You were always going to be ultra violent, and the missions you were given always gave you that objective until GTA 5, where they started to justify all of the different ways you could play through the use of different characters. Obviously you're playing as one dude in Red Dead 2, but it sounds like you can be a good guy. I mean, a good-ish guy.
You're given an option to be a good guy, a good-ish guy, a relatively neutral, non-scrupulous guy, or like a downright villain.
Can I
and
be
more often than not, I've tried to play good guy who forgets the gun controls and then accidentally shoots someone dead that he was trying to spare. But it sends a message to his buddies.
So can I be evil lawful?
I'm pretty sure you could play within like a lawful evil paradigm. I mean, there are situations where, say, I've tried to chase down an eyewitness to a crime and I've lassoed this guy up and he tries to run away and he slips while I lasso him, so he's dangling over a cliff edge and I've got my lasso and I'm trying to pull him up. But I moved the wrong way, so instead of saving his life, I end up dragging him against some rocks at the bottom of the cliff, and he dies. Like, the systems in the game are really, really fun to play around with. Like, as far as a game where random encounters and kind of what you're doing in the open world can shape as much of your entertainment experience as the actual storylines and quests, I think Rockstar Games really have a lot of room for that. This game feels, I don't know, a lot more authentic or genuine in your interactions with characters versus the old GTA games I used to play, where it's just like faceless, nameless people in the city that you are choosing to not run over with your car or like rob for their money. There's a much finer line that you can kind of walk between being a good guy and then making a mistake and being labeled as a bad guy to being an outright bad guy. And there's even ways to like commit, I think, robberies and whatnot in a way that's not good necessarily, but on neutral grounds. Like people with shady side businesses, you can rob their shady side businesses, and that overall helps the community. But you're also robbing someone, so you're still getting like a loot benefit out of that.
Yeah.
So
I'm convinced I'll probably pick it up.
Yeah, this is Moral Grey Dead Redemption.
I'm already in the PlayStation Store right now, downloading.
I think you're really going to enjoy it. I hope you have a good time.
So, two questions for you then.
Yes.
Question number A. Have you lost your hat?
Oh yeah, I lose my hat all the time. I have been jumped by. Oh, shit. That's the most important thing. I'm going to answer this question. I'm going to follow up with some important information. We'll get to question number two.
Cool.
I've lost my hat a lot. I've got it punched off my face. I've got it shot off my head. I've been stabbed after being ambushed, checking out a dead body that was positioned in a weird way off of a trail and got my hat sliced off my head. I have lost so many hats in so many different ways, and one of my favorite things to do is when I realize I don't have a hat anymore, taking a hat off of somebody else that I've recently had, to put it lightly, a scuffle with. My favorite is when I went to collect a debt, and I accidentally ended up killing a guy because I had my knife equipped, so when I went to melee fight him, I ended up just stabbing him to death in the middle of the street.
Oh.
And then I had to loot him for the loan money that I was trying to pick up that his girlfriend really owed, but he had. And so I looted him, and she yelled at me for looting him, and she's like, "You might as well take everything in his pockets. I've paid him every dime I've got, you sick son of a bitch." And so then I grabbed his hat right afterward and put his bowler on, and I was like, "Well, all right, I'll see you later." And I got on down the road. Okay, so the follow-up here is there is a mode in this, Neil, that I think you'd find particularly interesting and Cookie. I hope you don't have as much trouble with it as I have, but it is called the cinematic mode. You can essentially establish a cinematic camera that takes these very movie, like, very, very actually Tarantino in like The Hateful Eight and Django Unchained and all these other like Western panoramic wide view shots.
Magnificent Seven.
Almost any cowboy flick of the modern era.
Ridiculous Six.
Sure. you can just keep naming cowboys and numbers.
Frightful.
I'm sure we'll get down to the partridge in a pear tree. But this cinematic camera mode is really cool. You can essentially start like auto moving your horse along a trail or a set route with it. And so when there's dialogue options going on with characters, you can essentially just get what is like a movie cutscene out of it that it's immediately interactable with from that view, or you can snap out of the view for a little bit easier time with the controls. But I've been using it quite a bit on missions where I'm escorting someone back to town, or I'm on a ride with my buddies before we raid a enemy bandit camp or something. And it is a delight. The only problem with it is obviously movie angles are not always the best angles for seeing what's in front of you. So I've been like auto galloping down the road and run into a blockade of bandits and not seen it until like seconds before where they're trying to rob me. But instead, I just blast through on my horse, crash into it, catapult off of my horse, and then get into a gunfight where six or eight, seven people that I would have thrown a Molotov at or something all just gun me down in the dirt while I'm trying to get back up. So the camera can be a little buggy in tight spaces. It also does not work well for certain random encounters. But it is a really cool feature that I think is going to add some like lifespan to the game when it comes to traveling from area to area, keeping it from being really boring, running through the same environment again and again and again. It's a very pretty game. I know you have the PS4 Pro, Cookie. I imagine that with the like screen setup you've got and your PlayStation, this may be one of the prettiest experiences you've gotten to see as far as like a natural environment or landscape in a video game.
Okay, I'm glad you said that, because I'm going to say Spider-Man's going to be pretty hard to beat.
Spider-Man's gorgeous, but there's better puddle graphics in this one.
That face.
I would say the one thing that's tough, especially when you're playing on a really... Actually, I don't know if the size of the screen matters as much as just the first-person camera in GTA 5. I don't know how well that worked out, but the first-person perspective really in this game, when you're exploring a room, can get a little nauseating because you're just kind of swimming around at how fast the camera angle moves. But it's pretty invaluable for when you're searching tight spaces. They keep really detailed environments, which I also appreciate. Every cabin looks a little different. And so a lot of the elements that would have seemed very repetitive in like decorating environments really kind of fit in and create a cohesive but unique atmosphere for most of the places that you explore, which is very nice, because that's one of the things that gets tough over time as you play games like these that have 50-hour campaigns or something, is once you've seen like six or seven cabins in The Witcher, you've seen every cabin in The Witcher. And there is enough differentiation between every single area that it really seems like they've kept the towns relatively small and handcrafted in comparison to just littering it with tons and tons of copy-pasted elements that have slight tweaks to their color or something.
No more questions.
I thought you had a second one.
I did not actually have a second question.
Oh.
It might have gotten answered.
He lied. Yeah. He lied. See, this is this little the little bad cowboy icon would pop up on the right-hand Cookie screen here. You were playing Red Dead, which always happens to me when I least expect it. Go ahead.
So is this
Neil.
Is this as close as we're going to get to like filling up the Mass Effect? Not so much in the sci-fi obviously, but more in like the moral choice gap that we have now that Mass Effect is basically dead. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't know
with
if
Paragon
it's,
and Renegade.
I don't know if it's necessarily that's tough. Mass Effect, what's very interesting about those games is there's a lot of dialogue to run through. And this game is obviously very streamlined, where the dialogue's not nearly as dense as to offer you like a whole wheel of options. However, the outcomes in Mass Effect are still like Paragon or Renegade or neither. Like, you just don't have the moves to make Paragon and Renegade happen. Can you stop dancing in front of the screen?
She's playing soccer with the dog. I'm enjoying it.
The dog's favorite pastime is biting Sierra's feet, which can turn into a pretty tough situation sometimes when she's trying to run away. but if we boil down Mass Effect, there's Paragon and Renegade. It's still a binary, like, good or bad. It just back when BioWare did Coder and Coder 2, you still have dark side, light side. You have to commit to one to get some sort of like benefit or bonus. But ultimately, if you're evil on the binary or you're good on the binary, you just get extreme options that allow you to kind of meet the same ends. I think there may be some similarity between that and this game. It's like you can be evil and rob a bunch of people and get tons of money that way, or you can be good and people acknowledge your goodness around town and so you get discounts, so you need less money so you don't have to rob people as often. I don't think that there's, like, this is the same issue I encountered in BioShock 2, where it's like you can save little sisters or you can grind them up into paste, and I ground them up into paste only to find out that if you save them, you just get benefits given to you instead of you having to purchase them. So it's one of those things where these game systems don't actually challenge or reward you for doing right things or wrong things. And if anything, being a good character is easier than a bad character because there's no pursuance by the law. There's no issue that you have to deal with being a criminal, but you still get most of the benefits that you would otherwise circumvent being a criminal in the game. So that's one thing that I miss about these morality, or that's one thing that I wish these morality systems and games did more effectively, is in Fallout, if you're playing at a super high difficulty in some of the early Fallout games, it's actually really difficult to be a very good person because every resource, every interaction, every item is valuable to you at the start of the game. And so you have to kind of be a lot greedier if you're playing at a high level in it. And I think that that gets modified later in the game where you just get so well equipped that you can just hand out purified water and boost your karma all the time. But I really like games where making the right decision is not always the easiest thing, and sometimes even makes the game harder, because I think that's sometimes the value of being a good person, even in a video game sense, is like you shouldn't necessarily have to institute a reward for being a good person for players if they want to act that way.
Right.
It's already a video game, so it's like there's no actual stake or risk in it for the player besides added effort, but if it's entertaining to do so, then I think it serves the video game's purpose. I didn't mean to get into a like ethical discussion on video game morality.
Yeah, you did.
But we're here.
I'm assuming that covers Red Dead.
I mean, yeah, that's all I have to say about Red Dead for now. I can bring up some more fun anecdotes next time and let you know how the game progresses further. But I figure we should put a fork in it until Cookie gets some time with it. And Neil, if you get the chance.
Yeah, I probably will put Spider-Man on the back burner for now and end up picking up Red Dead instead.
I would wholeheartedly say that if you haven't bought a game in a while, especially for the PlayStation, and you're like waffling between Spider-Man or Red Dead, just pull the trigger with Red Dead. Spider-Man was a good game. Already seems a much shallower experience to play Spider-Man versus playing a day's worth of Red Dead.
Well, since the topic came up, I just, as a real quick aside before we talk about a game that I think all of us have had some experience in, since you brought up games of the year, so to speak, at one point, Cookie, and Scott, you said that, like, or I can't remember who it was, but someone said that this it'd be tough to beat Spider-Man, right? Cookie, what was it?
Yeah, it's going to be one of my top games of the year due to the fact that I was actually able to play it and beat it, but it still had enough, like, depth that some people are still playing it and enjoying it.
Hey, I've got a game for you. It's called Preschool Tetris, okay? You can beat it, and then it'll be the best game of your year. Now, the game that I feel has made a very serious argument for me, or very serious attempt to be that game of the year for me, and I've brought it up before, but I really just want to hammer home the point that you guys should maybe try and pick it up if it goes on sale, or if you just feel like a Metroidvania. The Messenger is pretty solid. It's it's really good. I'm at like the end game, or what I think is the end game, and it's opened up entirely. And granted, part of my experience has been based on the fact that I didn't know it was going to be all these different things when playing it. I knew there was time travel, but I didn't realize you would start using it in the middle of the Metroidvania portion of the game, or the second half of the game. So it mm-hmm. there are points where you're kind of doing Titanfall 2 shit, where you have to jump between times to platform correctly. Really, really cool in that regard. And the writing has only, like, it went from charming to funny at times to, like, fantastic. Nothing's ever serious, but, like, there are some twists in that game that just feel so right and so good. And again, nothing serious, no serious twists, more comical twists. A lot of unanswered questions in the first half of the game get answered after the big reveal, as you say. And then the game continues to surprise you with ridiculously stupid, funny jokes that just make this game a big contender for Game of the Year. And it's crazy because three of those games for me right now are all retro games. That being Octopath Traveler, this game, The Messenger, and Curse of the Moon, which is the Castlevania's Igarashi. It was technically a bonus game that they got from Kickstarter for Ritual of the Moon, which is basically a spiritual successor to the Castlevania PlayStation 1 era Castlevania games. Those aside, a game that might not have me so enthusiastic that I would say it's the best game of the year, but I am having a fantastic time with it. It looks like all of us now have played Super Mario Party.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as played Super Mario Party, have we also done the, like, I don't remember what it's called, but it's essentially the baton or just the motion controls exclusive the rhythm game mode?
Yeah.
Yes.
Honestly, that may be my favorite part of it. I know it's this weird gauntlet of just motion control rhythm games that are very WarioWare-esque, but it's just a delight, especially on the remix speed.
I haven't played it on the remix speed. I'll have to play a bit more.
Yeah, we did of the difficulties yesterday. My only complaint I have for any of the motion controls in that game are that I don't think that the Switch's hardware is actually accurate enough to know you're doing the exact motion. So every time...
It's not perfect, no.
It's not just the just dance mode, basically, as I'll call it. It's any motion game. I've determined that the best way to shake the controller or to do whatever it is that you're supposed to with the controller is if you're holding it up like you were in horizontal mode, you keep that same grip, but you only have it held in one of your two hands, and then you just twitch it, and whatever, like, it doesn't matter what you have to do, you just twitch it, and the game is going to assume you're doing whatever it is that you're supposed to do correctly. Just twitch it.
Interesting.
That's it. So the entirety of that is just me sitting down with the controller, going like this, twitching it in a very nonsensical motion, but very small, to the beat, like and I do better that way than if I do the real motions.
Neil's finally developed his top tier Mario Party strategy.
I mean,
that same thing actually.
This isn't even that different from like what you do in Skyward Sword. Really, you just figure out like the best way to like the least amount of movement to do the slash that you need. Like at
I
least
never
in
got
Sky-
the slash right though. You know that there are enemies in Skyward Sword that have like electrified blocks, essentially. Yeah, and just with those, it was kind of an endurance match on how often I could swing the Wiimote into the electrified field before they moved it, so I could get the attack off, because I had no precision with that game. The Ghirahim boss battles were the same thing, where I'd just wildly flail my arm, and I'd hope he'd lose more health than I would lose hearts in an exchange.
That's bad. I like it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, my criticisms of the motion controls aside, though, like, it works when you're doing the motions as they want you to as well. So really, it's just a matter of like,
yeah,
it's kind of like the Wii Sports, where if you're doing it the way they want you to, you're getting your workout, so to speak.
The one thing I forgot to bring up outside of the video game portion is I finally saw the 1982 remake of The Thing.
How'd that go for you?
Oh my gosh. Without going into too much detail, actually the guy who voices Captain Anderson in Mass Effect is a primary character in that movie, Keith David. And he's also about 20 years younger than I've seen him in any other media that I've consumed. But exceptionally good sci-fi movie with horrible, horrible green screen effects.
Wait, which film did you watch? It's The Thing,
the 1982 version of The Thing.
Okay, sorry, I thought you said the remake, so referring to the 2011
version. Well, it's a remake of like a 1950s. I think The Thing originally was also in, it was a remake of a film by a different name, called, I believe, Who Goes There. But yeah, this is the John Campbell version is what I'm saying. Really, really awesome film. Just thought I'd throw that in there for anybody who's looking for a scary movie to watch for this Halloween. Because this episode's going to come out probably right before, right on, or right after Halloween.
Yeah,
sometime right within the next 30 days relevant to what we're doing now.
I was going to say, don't put Neil in a box.
I gave him a very big box with plenty of room and wood chips to scurry in.
Yeah.
We've deviated from Mario Party.
I can share like some general feelings on it.
Okay.
I've always struggled with these games because it's like, unless I'm playing them with a group of people, I never feel like they're ever worth putting or committing any time to. But I don't know if it's just because I'm at a different age now that I don't mind playing with AI, or if genuinely this game or any other past iteration of Mario Party has, but I haven't played it, has kind of fixed some of the issues that you can have by playing them just with one other person or possibly by yourself. The way the game kind of unfolds or opens up new modes and new features as you play along gives you a sense of direction or a progression that you normally wouldn't expect or need out of a party game. I also think that the AI, even at like its current hardest difficulty, I guess there's one step further than that too that you have to unlock, is like a mixture of still like stupidity, also with sheer like AI cheat going on. So like, there's no way you're going to be able to beat a button-mashing AI and very hard if they have buddies and you're by yourself, for instance. There's just like, there's no level of difficulty there. It's just you lose. But at the same time, like the AI seems to do a decent job figuring out like who the best person to steal a star from. Like if human player B happens to be right next to a star, they will account for them being in proximity of that star. So even if player A has a bigger lead with the same amount of stars and more coins, they'll take from player B because they're going to end up at the next star. Small things like that just seem to make more sense, or the AI seems to do a better job making those decisions. And so the game's not like painlessly easy to win, even at the hardest difficulties. What else? Some of the gimmicky things on the side are also pretty fun to mess with too, like the stickers. And maybe it's because I just like putting these characters in really stupid poses. But like, I spent a good 30 to 40 minutes messing around with stickers, which like is something I would never expect myself to do.
I couldn't figure out how to use or mess around with the stickers. I go into the room with the stickers, and then I'd just see the stickers, and I'd be like, okay. Then I'd leave that room.
You couldn't like put stickers on. You just talk to either the toad or you hit the action button in front of the mural or whatever it is. The sticker mat. Oh.
Can you explain the stickers?
So
it's a secret room to the left-hand side of the Mario Party area. So if you go to the right, it's the two switch mode room.
Yeah. Okay.
If you go to the left, it's left and like catty corner. There's a red pipe, right?
Green Pipe, I think. I think they're both Green Pipes.
Green Pipe, where you get to go into a room and play with stickers. And I never got a chance to play with the stickers. So, Neil, take it away.
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing special. It's just you unlock stickers as you make more progression into the game, be it just playing certain game modes or actually getting gems. I'm not sure what's linked up to it, but those things continue to unlock more stickers you can buy using the party points, which, of course, are not an actual paid currency, but an in-game currency that you get from playing the game. And so the better stickers are usually given to you later or purchasable later, but you get to just make up stupid poses with these characters and stickers and all these weird emotes and things. And again, like, it's something superficial with absolutely no gameplay value to it, but it's easy to spend 30 minutes just making up some stupid scene. And that just furthers my whole point that the game, there's like a progression to it that even if you're not using it as a party game, you can be compelled, if you're having fun, to continue playing the game. I can only see how much fun this game offers between its 3 or 4, if you put in the motion control content, its 4 game modes, like the regular Mario Party, then you have like the free movement team-based Mario Party, and then you have the raft Mario Party, or like where you have to go down the you basically are going rafting. I don't know if you guys have played that mode at all, but that's actually really fun to play with someone else. And I imagine as 4 people trying to coordinate which direction to go would only be even more hilarious.
I'll have to try that out next time I play Mario Party with my sister and her husband, because we didn't get to do that, but I'm very excited to do some whitewater rafting.
It's weird because like what I wanted out of a Mario Party game going into it is just like, give me interesting boards that can make anyone salty and give me a bunch of fun mini games. And I think they've accomplished both of those things. But the rafting is like an unexpected delight, because all it really is it's your 4 players on a raft, 2 sides each with their oars. And as you're going down this river, you can run into red balloons for mini games. And if they're all cooperative mini games too, which that's all, like a very nice, refreshing change. And if you do well, you get more time on the raft.
It's like an extended mini game with other mini games, like essentially inserted in.
Exactly. But it's all cooperative. And the idea is that you only have X amount of time to get through the entire course. And you further give yourself more bonus time by winning at mini games and hitting like second icons or like 30 second icons that give you more time. And so just like any cooperative game in a party setting, there is probably going to be someone that starts to troll it up. And like, those are the types of things I could see being extremely fun in Mario Party. Because if one person's trolling, the other 3 could potentially still save the day.
Man, you have quite a sinister grin as soon as you introduce that someone could muck up the cooperative system.
I mean, I feel like...
Someone.
We're going to have to play Mario Party when I'm back in town again.
Do you know when you're going to be back?
I don't know. I'll make another vacation out that way. It probably won't be my first choice, but it'll be soon enough.
Just, we'll figure something out.
Yeah, why don't you guys come out to Montana and hang out at my dude ranch that I'm going to set up after I finish Red Dead. I'll have learned all the skills.
Are you going to go in with a 6 shooter and then rob your family of their house?
Yeah, damn. and if it goes anything like my gameplay in Red Dead has, I'll put the bandana on after I come in.
Oh, that's good.
I'll put it up and be like, now they'll forget my face. Super Mario Party's been great. It's been a real delight. The mini games are a lot of fun. What do you feel about, my last question is, how do you feel about the addition of both the ally system and the dice system, and kind of how those also correspond to one another? As you get allies, you get their dice, which also contributes to mini games, I believe.
It does. There is a ally system mini game. I like that feature, honestly.
It's really cool.
Changes things up when you're like, oh God, That's one stupid AI is just going in that circle to get as many fucking friends as possible. Shit.
On the Thwomp, map, isn't there a circle for the allies?
Actually, on every map, there's a circle for the allies.
Really?
Yeah. If you hit start to like view the map, Toad will always give his toad tips.
Uh-huh.
And he'll actually break down each of the like maps. So he'll be the map itself. He'll be like, so you go in this area to get friends. You go in this area to get coins. You go this one to get stars.
Oh man, I've got to definitely figure out what the optimal like mathematical strategy is then to get allies before collecting stars in this game.
The level of RNG from your dice movement, though, is like it. I don't know. I feel like they do a good job tuning the importance of stars, early game stars, and allies really well.
Have either of you hit a hidden block and gotten a star from it yet?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I've had a game where I hit four hidden blocks and each time could not land on that like slice with the star. Is there a secret to this that I'm missing?
Nope. You don't
be
hit
either Asian or black.
Yeah.
Damn, I'm fucked.
It's working out for us. Now, you don't have to hit anything, so it's all RNG there.
It's all RNG. Okay. I thought that I was supposed to like hit the propeller or like hit A while the dial's spinning, but the dial is already like coming to a slow after you hit it. So I thought that I was just not responding fast enough.
Nope. As soon as it pops up, it's just random. I think if you don't hit anything, you've got a better chance.
Okay. That's good to know.
Oh, that would be good because they train you to hit things all the time in that game. Like even when you're stealing coins in other games, you're supposed to hammer B or A
to mash it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's such a nice heel turn from the developers.
Showing restraint is actually how you get the benefit.
There are so many good, like, infuriating mini games too that you have to rely on your teammate for, like Facelift. Is that what it is?
Oh yeah, that one is tough.
Where you're dropping these pieces on you have a Bowser or Mario or whatever character, and you drop the face.
It's how you end up with a cross-eyed Mario or Bowser. I think. The two AI, if you have two AI partners that I don't know what level they're at, but they'll essentially try and even stuff out so much, you end up with like a Cyclops because they drop the eyes one on top of the other in the center. They're like, we're shooting for the averages here.
I'm trying to think of what other good games. They're like, a lot of the games are so simplistic, but they just appeal to me on so many different levels. Like, there's one where there are 9 cloud spaces, and your characters, the 4 characters, are each on like the left, right, top, and bottom clouds.
Yeah.
And you have to commit to like jumping to one of the additional 5 spaces, and each space has coins, a different amount of coins. So it's like a psychological game of like, okay, there's obviously a shit ton of coins in the center, but if I jump at that, that probably has the highest chance of someone else jumping towards it. And if 2 people jump to the same space, they knock each other backwards. Have you guys played this one?
Yeah, I haven't, but it sounds good. I was just thinking, I was trying to think of a single mini game I played that I didn't like, because everybody's got those games in Mario Party where they're like, oh, this mini game sucks. And for me, it's always the pinball or Tetris mini games. But I actually haven't encountered one that I haven't enjoyed yet. I mean, Facelift kind of sucks. It's not that fun, but
it's more fun just either. When you are working with someone that like, or if you're going against someone that's not good at, like if it's against 2 AI and the AI is fucking up the other their face, or if you're like going against a human who has an AI and the AI continues, it's kind of more of like enjoying how bad things happen in a mini game. Do you like the abundance of pure movement, no interaction games that they've also put into? Like a lot of games, you have no other button presses aside from movement.
I don't mind them.
Yeah, that's fine.
I think it was like a creative way for them to generate like an extra 20 mini games. Because like there are, I think, 80 mini games in whole in this game, which I think is one of the higher amounts they have in the series. And
yeah,
it's kind of weird because I realized partway through, we were just like trying to go through each of the mini games and start favoriting which ones. And it occurred to me that a good like 20 of these mini games have no interaction other than just movement. And yet they do such a good job of making them feel unique from one another.
Like the one where you're running away from the punching ghosts or whatever. The character models each have a different like width to them too. And so my sister was playing fat ass Monty Mole and kept like shouldering me out of corners that I could otherwise make against the other opponents to slow me down. Like there is a beauty in the simplicity of some of these games and still how they're so much fun.
Good times all around though, Super Mario Party.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of running long here. Are there any other games you guys have been playing?
Oh no, we're running super long. We can just talk about those games later.
Indeed.
In the
also,
future.
This actually has the least amount of minigames.
Wait, really?
Off of a quick search. Super Mario Party has 50 minigames total. 56 if the player counts the different courses for some of the minigames. Mario Party 2, 65 minigames. Mario Party 8, 73 minigames. Mario Party 4, 64 minigames. And that's all I really care to look up.
Wait, what are you talking about? I've read articles saying there are 80 mini games.
Are there?
Maybe they're counting the mini games from the raft and from the rhythm and all that.
Wait, one second. Never mind. 50 Mario Party mini games. Never mind.
Yeah, that is correct. I do remember looking that number up for the original Mario Party. Slapperazzi is also so great.
That's I have not one. Played that yet, but as soon as I went over to hang out with Caitlin and Sam, they were like, I hope we get Slapperazzi. It's the best mini game.
It really is. Oh my God, if you ever see Peach, she just always looks fucking elegant no matter what she's doing in each picture. Lizzie found this out as we were like 3/4 of the way through it all, and she's like, you know what? Peach looks like a fucking rock star in all these pictures, and then they show all the pictures at the very end, and it's like, you know what? Fuck you, Peach. You actually do. This one, you're being hit, and you just look great. You just look fabulous.
Too photogenic.
Looking at the list, though, I did come up with one mini game that I thought was just dumb. The Trike Harder mini game.
That's my favorite one. I love it.
It was
That's
again,
the one where you're doing this?
Yeah, where you're supposed to be like... moving the controller in a way that like imitates the pedals of a trike. And so my issue with it is that this game is the exact same as Precision Gardening, which is the exact same as any other game that just wants you to move the controller in a way that's faster than everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And because I use the same motion in Trike Harder as I do Precision Gardening, which just means I shake it fiercely. With no other control, I just shake it in the same twitch motion I do, and I go faster than anyone. I shake it in the same way I have to shake it when I'm wiping the windows clean in the motion minigame on the Just Dance copy.
So but, you just think it's stupid because you're cheating the system.
Yeah, I'm absolutely cheating the system, and I feel, but there's no other way to beat the very hard AI. So it's like you just kind of have to do the exact same thing you do in like two other games. I'm reminded, though, as I go through this list, too, the Sizzling Steaks minigame is actually fantastic. So that's one where you get like a perfect cube piece of meat, and you have to cook each side of the steak. And you flip the steak using motion controls. And at first I thought that you just would twitch it as soon as you felt the rumble. The rumble indicates that the steak is cooking. Or rather, once the rumble stops, that indicates the steak is done cooking on that side. So you then flip it. But the game actually accounts for the position that the steak is in at that point in time and how hard you flip it. So technically, I'm not sure if this is true, but... you might even be able to do like a 360 flip in the air if you flipped it hard enough. But you can also flip the steak out of your frying pan if you flip it too wildly. So
yeah,
like you actually have to watch and wait for the steak to hit that right angle so you can flip it onto the uncooked side perfectly. It's a really fun game when you consider all things in it.
We'll have to play that.
I also thought maybe the shell-shocked mini game in the Toad's Rec Room was really not that great. I think it had potential to be more fun, but it was, I mean, I guess I'm expecting a little too much out of that. But it's funny because I really like the mini baseball league game that they have that kind of emulates an old plastic baseball board.
Wait, you guys have a second Switch?
No, but you can play that with one.
Oh, well, that doesn't sound like fun, though.
Yeah, I think it's fine.
It's the idea of using both Switches that makes those ones triable for me. I haven't actually tried them out yet because we never got the second copy.
It's too bad. Maybe we can bring it at some point.
I'm down.
I really don't think though that the two Switch mini games look all that great.
If you got any comments, questions, concerns, or feedback, don't hesitate to write us at podcast@fancyramen.com.
And if you don't want to give your opinions to the anonymous void that is the internet, why don't you tell a friend?
Damn, that was like the shortest version. I'm digging it. I usually edit down things now. So catch us next week. Otherwise, you can catch us on twitch.tv/fancyramentv for all sorts of random games. At some point this week, the first episode of What the Buck will be coming out, and that'll be fun. Playing some ridiculous game called Shut Up and Jam Barkley Gaiden. Have a good week, everyone.
Ooh, nice.
Bye.
Bye.